Mercedes. And your mate tattoos this ball. Oh, where is it going to land? Bring him home.
White Sox beat the Royals yesterday, and the Royals are now 3-3 on the season. 6-0 was the final. That Royals offense that was clicking early in the year. Well, the last two games, 18 innings, they have scored a total of 2 runs, and Brad Keller struggling yesterday in his second start of the year. He struggled really, really badly in his first start. Yesterday gives up 3 in the first, couple of home runs, 6 hits, 4 runs, 3 walks, 3 Ks, 3 1/3, but he lowered his ERA to 19.29. as the Royals fall 6-0, just 5 hits on offense. And the last two games, the Royals have struck out 25 times at the plate, 14 against the Cleveland baseball squad, and then 11 as Lance Lynn, a complete game, 5-hit shutout, 11 Ks and no walks as the Royals offense goes silent. And Brad Keller continues to struggle. He is the ace on the staff, the number one starter. Mike Matheny not giving up on his number one starter.
Well, this is a guy that believe is going to be his way through that first game for us. We believe that he's going to be the pitcher that we know he can be. And we watched signs of that all through spring training. Never want to get too far ahead of yourself. Right now, it's 2 outings that didn't go anything like how he wanted them to go. He's going to have to make those adjustments and jump right back in there. But even as I told him as he was walking off the mound today, we've got all the faith in the world in you. You're going to get this figured out, and you're going to come back here, and you're going to lead this staff. And that's exactly what I want him to lead.
Yeah, I mean, you can't give up on your number one starter after a couple of starts. And we see guys that start out slow, pitchers, and kind of figure some things out later in the season. And the Royals better hope so, because right now, Ryan LaFever, the voice of the Royals, was with us earlier this week. And I asked him what was his biggest concern, and he said starting pitching. He didn't even hesitate. And he went through it, and he said, you know, I think Keller will be fine, although he wasn't last night. And he also, you look at the starting five, Mike Minor did not pitch well last year, but 2 years ago pitched pretty well with Texas. He's your number two starter right now. Brady Singer, shortened, abbreviated season as his rookie year, 60-game season. Teams now have a book on Brady Singer, so can Singer adjust? LaFever thinks he can. And then Duffy has been up and down his whole career, but this year, first start, 6 scoreless innings, and then Junis is in the bullpen, although he was a spot starter. And this is what's interesting. The Royals have played 6 games. They have 2 quality starts from their starting pitchers, and they've come from their 4th and 5th starters.
5, yeah.
Duffy, your 4th, and Junis, your 5th starter. Your 1, 2, and 3s have had 4 starts and have 0 quality starts. 2 from Keller, 1 by Minor, 1 by Singer. So that is concerning, because if you can't get it to the bullpen, and the bullpen seems to be a strength of this team, and the offense, I think, will be fine at the end. Scuffling a little bit right now. Your starting pitching has to be better than it's been so far. But the Royals, despite that bad starting pitching, they are 3-3, as they have today off. And then the Royals will be back in action coming up on Saturday tomorrow at 1:10. Mike Minor on the hill for the boys in blue. So the Royals having some struggles offensively last couple of games, going up against a couple of good pitchers, and then they're starting pitching, continuing to struggle. So we'll continue to follow that throughout the long 162-game Major League Baseball season. Speaking of baseball, there was some yesterday, Dusty, locally.
Yeah, baseball, softball, and track. We'll get the baseball scores first. Beloit and Lincoln, Sylvan Lucas, games were played in Beloit for both baseball and softball yesterday because the fields were a little wet in Lincoln and Sylvan Grove. So they moved those up to Beloit, and Beloit gets a split with Lincoln, Sylvan Lucas in baseball, a 15-8 win in game one for the Trojans as they led 10-0 in the first, and then Noah Gershner came in with 5-plus innings pitched in relief. We allowed just 1 earned run in that one as Beloit won 15-8. And then in game two, it was Lincoln Sylvan Lucas, 8-3 win over Beloit. So, again, the split between the Trojans and the Leopards there yesterday at Bill Foreman Field in Beloit. In softball, Beloit gets a sweep over Sylvan Lucas Lincoln. They win game one, 5-0. Kimberlyn Nichols, a complete game shutout, pitching all 7 innings, allowing just 1 hit and 10 strikeouts. And game two, Chloe Odell pitched a complete game shutout as well, giving up just 1 hit with 17 strikeouts as Beloit won the second game 4-0 over Sylvan Lucas Lincoln. So Beloit now 6-0 on the season. Sylvan Lucas Lincoln is 3-3 on the softball field. with those two losses yesterday. Also, yesterday, Concordia Track and Field Invitational. Beloit was competing, and Concordia as well, from the area in that meet. And the girls' team standings, Marysville was first with 159 points. Buehler second at 147. Concordia finished third, and Beloit fourth. Lady Trojans brought home a total of 4 medals, 2 gold, 1 silver, 1 bronze. Sage Prohaska won the discus with a throw of 103 feet 5 inches, and J.C. Carter won the shot put with a throw of 33 feet 6 inches. The silver medal winner was Allie Hayfliger in the pole vault, and then bronze medal winner J.C. Carter in the discus for Beloit. On the boys' side, Buehler won the team title with 137 points ahead of Marysville in second with 130. Concordia was third with 93, and Beloit finished in sixth place there on the boys' side in the track and field invitational. Trojan boys brought home a total of 6 medals, 2 gold, 3 silver, 1 bronze. Gold medal winners Brenna Walker in the javelin with a throw of 180 feet even. Grady Seifert won the discus with a throw of 138 feet 9 inches. And the silver medal winners, Brenna Walker in the high jump and 300-meter hurdles, and then Wyatt Brockman, the 800-meter run, finished second, and then a bronze medal for Grady Seifert in the shot put for Beloit. So full results for the Concordia Invitational. If you want to see the results for the Panthers and the other teams that were there, can be found at ncksports.com. Also, coming up today, we have a pretty limited schedule as far as immediate areas concerned. We have baseball. Concordia is at Riley County, Abilene at Southeast of Saline, Republic County at Clay Center, and Sacred Heart at Russell. And then softball, Abilene at Southeast, Sacred Heart at Russell. Track and field, Pike Valley and Republic County are at the Riley County Freeze and Falcon Relays this afternoon. They're in rural Riley, Kansas. So that's what's coming up on the schedule for today. As always, if you're interested in seeing where your favorite teams are participating in the spring, visit ncksports.com for all the schedules.
And we will have live video streaming of baseball and softball for Beloit coming up on Tuesday, beginning at 4 o'clock with doubleheaders at home in Beloit against Clay Center. All right. Wild way to win a baseball game yesterday. If you didn't see this, it's, I don't even know how to, describe it. I just, it's maddening to me that common sense doesn't come to play with an umpire. I know umpires have a hard job to do, but they also know the rules.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to me that an umpire has a rule available to him to apply to cover his rear end, and he doesn't even use it. And if you don't know the situation, yesterday the Mets were playing the Marlins in New York. Michael Conforto, remember him, played against the Royals in 2015, mm-hmm. young and up-and-coming player. He's kind of been a pedestrian type of player. With the bases loaded, Conforto came up, one out in a tie game, 2-2. He was hit by a pitch to force in the game-winning run. Replay showed the ball hit Conforto. There's no doubt about that, though it sure looks like he leaned into the pitch. And at best, Conforto did not make an effort to get out of the way. Oh, yeah, and here's the other thing. The pitch was in the strike zone.
Yeah.
So it was called a strike initially, and then the umpire realized that, hey, I think he got hit by the pitch, called a hit by pitch. Then they went to review it. They can review whether or not he was hit by the pitch, but they can't review whether or not he made an effort to get out of the way or if he leaned into the strike zone. And this is the problem I have with replay. I have two problems with replay in any sport. I think the intent of replay is good. It's about getting it right. That's what I always hear from every sports institution, right?
Yeah.
The replay is in place to get it right. But here's the two things that really, really I just get tired of with replay. And it's in every sport. One, takes way too long to replay something and figure out a decision. If you can't decide within, I would say, 30 seconds, then just go with the call on the field. If it's that close and you've had multiple replays in 30 seconds or maybe 60 seconds, fine. It takes too long. I am getting so tired of NBA games where the last 2 minutes take 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Because they review every – and they do it in college basketball now too. Every single – like, there's plays where it's clear that the guy – only one guy was near the ball and deflected out of bounds. It is clear as day, and the officials are using replay as a crutch – and they go to review it. And right away, a player does the whole spin the finger in the air thing, like, come on, man, let's review it. Under 2 minutes, you're going to review it. And it just, like, every single play is reviewed. Every time the ball goes out of bounds, of course it's going to be a close play. You got great athletes in pro and college competing to get a rebound, okay? I'm okay with going to the review, but let's get it quick and let's move the game along. Because what happens is everybody gets like 12 timeouts. We're getting to the point where I don't even know if teams need timeouts in their back pocket because they get so many stoppages for reviews. So that's one problem, is it takes too long to get it all taken care of, and there's probably too many reviews. Having said that, I will contradict myself knowingly, is that there are probably too many reviews as it is. But if you're going to have replay and you say the intent of replay is to make sure we get it right, then how is not everything in the game reviewable?
Yeah.
If you want to get it right, every single thing that could impact the game should be reviewable. And so when you go to the monitor yesterday to watch Michael Conforto, who didn't even try to get out of the way of the pitch and has this big elbow guard or pad on his elbow to protect himself, which provides a better chance for him to get hit. And by the way, players are taught to wear it. They're taught to just stand there. Some do lean into it, and the pros especially, and colleges do it as well. I see it at high school more and more, where players get hit by pitches and they don't even try to get out of the way. And I say it, and it's so crazy. Last night, I'm watching a high school baseball game, varsity baseball in Beloit. And the umpires, by the way, did a great job. They did a great job. They were very consistent with their strike zones and everything else. And so I know both teams got guys hit by pitches. And I said to the people in the press box, because I'm sitting in the press box running our video stream, we talked about this. I brought this up 5 minutes before I saw it on Twitter with the Mets. I kid you not. You can ask Kyle Beiser about this. Mm-hmm. And I said the kid didn't even try to get out of the way. I said the umpires don't enforce that rule anymore. The umpires don't have the stones, I guess, to say you didn't try to get out of the way. It's obvious. If the batter didn't move, he didn't try to get out of the way.
Yeah.
It is a judgment call, but there's lots of judgment calls. Every ball strike is a judgment call. So if we're worried about, we got too many judgment calls for umpires to worry about, well, I guess get rid of the rule. The rule is there to protect the umpire, and it's also there to help pitchers. Because if batters are going to be in the strike zone, how can a pitcher pitch?
Yeah.
If you're going to award a batter first base because he barely gets grazed on his elbow pad, where he's going up with a whole chunk of body armor, which that doesn't really happen at the high school level, but when kids aren't even trying to get out of the way and they get hit, what's a pitcher supposed to do? Is he ever going to be able to pitch inside ever again? Because here's the thing. If you are over the plate with your shoulder, your elbow, your hands, or whatever the case may be, and you don't move them and the ball hits you, here's what's supposed to happen. Here's what's supposed to happen. The pitch is declared either a ball or a strike by the umpire, whether to hit the batter or not. And the batter might think, hey, I'm going to run the first. I got hit by a pitch. And the umpire says, you stay right here. You didn't make an effort to get out of the way. And I remember growing up and watching baseball, and when I played it when I was young a long time ago, and I even remember probably 10 years ago, I saw umpires call that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't see it anymore. No. I don't see it at any level. I don't see any umpire. It's like the umpires have decided that's a judgment call that I don't want to make. I'm not going to get in an argument with a manager, and it's just going to be the rule doesn't even exist, even though it's there for me to apply. And I understand it to an extent because it's like, hey, he was hit by a pitch. But the pitcher has a right to the plate. I mean, what's next? The batter just stand like a goalie in hockey? And just stand right over home plate? And you're supposed to pitch it between his legs?
Yeah.
I mean, it is ridiculous. You need that rule to be applied. You need the rule to be applied. And then at the highest level of baseball, professional Major League Baseball, we are not applying the rule. The rule is there for the umpire to use. There's tons of rules, and the umpires know the rules. Todd Tischner is a Major League Baseball umpire from Southwest Kansas. We've had him on our show multiple times over the years, and he said the biggest thing that irritates him about an umpire when he goes to watch his kids play baseball, and he's a fan, he's not upset an umpire misses a call at second on a stolen base. He's not mad if an umpire misses seeing a guy, you know, somehow make a play or whatever, and they called or trapped the ball and they called it out. His problem has always been, he said, when umpires don't know the rules or how to apply them. Because that's what drives him nuts. Because that's your job. So here's one of his brethren in the industry, umpire, let's see, what's his name? I think Culpa is his last name. I don't have his first name. Was it Brock? Anyway, he made a mistake. He admitted after the game he messed up. But if you don't know what happened, they went to the review. And they determined that, yes, it's clear that Conforto got grazed on his elbow pad. That is clear. It's also clear that he made no effort to get out of the way. He also is clear that he slightly leaned in, and it's pretty, according to the K zone, that was a strike. Mm-hmm. Now, and by the way, the umpire originally called it a strike. Now, he could have called that a ball. That still doesn't mean you award the guy first base because he got hit. And the rule is very, very simple. It's Major League Baseball Rule 6.08B. It covers hit batsmen and says the pitch is to be called either a ball or strike, depending on its location, if the batter is deemed to have not made an attempt to avoid it. Here's the rule. The runner is awarded first base if he is touched by a pitch ball, which he is not attempting to hit, unless the ball is in the strike zone when it touches the batter, or two, the batter makes no attempt to avoid being touched by the ball. Only one of those two things has to be true for the umpire to apply the rule. Mm-hmm. That game, yesterday, both applied.
Those things were true, yes.
So then you go to the replay, and then he can't change the call because it's not reviewable. The umpire, he can't change that call. He could, when he called a strike and then hit batter, he could change it again and go back to strike and said he made no effort to get out of the way. But once he determined that he was hit by a pitch, there was really nowhere to go for the umpire because, in this case, replay didn't cover his rear end.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not reviewable. What's the point of replay if not everything is reviewable? I've never understood that. Well, we would have to review everything and slow the game up. We're already doing that with everything else. So here's the thing. If the ball is in the strike zone when it touches the batter, it shall be called a strike, whether or not the batter tries to avoid the ball. If the ball is outside the strike zone when it touches the batter, it shall be called a ball if he makes no attempt to avoid being touched. When the batter is touched by a pitch ball, which does not entitle him to first base, the ball is dead and no runner may advance. So when they determine the batter is hit by a pitch or the ball touched him somehow, the batter, and they determine, listen, you leaned in, you didn't make an effort to get out of the way, then the ball is dead, and the umpire has to decide whether or not that was a ball or a strike. And in this case, the umpire initially called a strike. Now, why is this such a big controversial call yesterday? Because it won the game for the New York Mets. Yeah. It determined the game. Had that pitch been called a strike, it would have been a strikeout.
Mm-hmm.
There have been two outs, and the bases loaded, and a tie game for the Marlins. Instead, hit by pitch, can't review that he didn't make an effort to get out of the way, and it's clear he made no effort to get out of the way. The pitch was a strike anyway. And so, thus, the umpire is held helpless by his original decision because he can't overturn it due to replay, but he can confirm that the batter was hit by the pitch. The only thing that would have saved the umpire is if that ball did not hit Converto. But we knew all the replay showed it clearly did, and the umpire had that part right. It did graze the elbow of the hitter. And so, thus, it was a walk-off hit by pitch. The game was decided. Don Mattingly, the manager of the Marlins after the game, and the Marlins are now on a four-game losing streak. They're 1-6. They really needed that game. And he said, I feel sorry for the umpire. He knows he messed up. He made a mistake. And the umpire's name is Ron Culpa. And you know what? I'm not going to get all over Ron Culpa because Ron Culpa is a human being. And he made a mistake. He owned up to it. He admitted that he blew the call. And I'll give a lot of credit to the New York Mets broadcasters. There's homerism, and there's homerism, and then there's actually common sense. Mm-hmm. The New York Mets broadcasters, and one is a former Major League pitcher in Ron Darling. The other is a former Major League baseball player who is a great player in Keith Hernandez. Their team just won the game, mm-hmm. and they were really upset with how the game ended, and they said, No, he didn't make any effort. He was in the strike zone when he got hit. This is horrible for the game of baseball. I mean, they were very adamant, and their team won.
Yeah.
And I'd say that's how bad that was. And so it's so weird that last night we're sitting in the press box watching high school kids get hit by pitches, and a couple kids never even try to get out of the way, and they're awarded first base when the umpire can easily say, you have to make an effort to get out of the way. Okay?
Yeah, even if it looks like a fake effort, right?
Right. Yeah, at least show a little effort. Yeah. granted, if there's a ball, you know, behind you or right at your rump, I mean, at least you got to turn. You got to at least try to turn or do something. If you just stand there and don't even move and see the ball coming, you're like, I'm just going to let it hit me. You automatically should not be awarded first base. You have to at least, like you said, act like you got to sell it. You know, like in college basketball, you sell a flop, right? Mm-hmm. You sell a flop. You got to sell it. Well, no, you don't. You should have to sell it, but you don't anymore. That is a rule that umpires are not applying anymore.
No.
it's like it's been erased from the rule book. And so we were talking about it in the press box. It wasn't a major deal. It's just something I've noticed for years. I'm like, if I'm a pitcher, I am entitled to the inside part of the plate. And if you do not give that to me as an umpire, and if you then allow batters to be all over the plate and have their arms in the strike zone, as Michael Conforto did yesterday, and you allow him to get hit by a strike, and you give him first base, what the bleep am I supposed to do as a pitcher? Yeah. You have a right to the strike zone as a pitcher, and umpires are supposed to enforce that strike zone. And that was messed up yesterday by not only Ron Culpa, but umpires at all kinds of levels of baseball. And I think it's pretty simple. I think umpires don't want to even go there because they figure there'll be this argument from the manager automatically. Like, come on, the manager. Some of the managers might even not even know the rule. They should. But I bet you fans don't even know the rule. I've known it for years. And I'm like, I've even second-guessed myself a few times over the years. Like, did they take it out of the rule book? No.
Yeah.
No. It's there. I just read it in the Major League Baseball rule book. It's there at all levels of baseball, unless something earth-shattering happened, they took it out at one level, which makes no sense. I was mad when I saw this video. Because this is Major League Baseball. There is no way Michael Conforto should be rewarded for putting his elbow in the strike zone, and you're punishing a pitcher. It's one thing if the pitch was a ball. It was a strike.
Yeah.
And it's got to change. And this might be the best thing that happened for umpires at all levels. If they saw this, might be a good thing for managers at all levels. It might be good for fans. And this might be the best thing to happen in regards to understanding the rule exists. And two, maybe we should apply it for once. Because this is about helping pitchers. They already have a hard time trying to hit this box. And now you're going to have a batter in the box, in the zone. What are you supposed to do if you keep rewarding the batter who not only is he in the zone, he leaned in a little bit.
Yeah.
He leaned in further into the zone and got hit by the pitch. And then it determined the winner of the game at the biggest level in baseball. That is flat out embarrassing. If I'm Major League Baseball, I'm embarrassed. And if I'm a Mets, I'm a little bit, I'll take the win, but I'm like, man, that was Bush League.
Yeah.
If I'm the Marlins, I'm ticked as heck. I'm like, that's a joke.
And, like, the way he leaned in was unnatural to his stance. It wasn't even leaning in. It was basically moving his arm lower off the bat and in. Like, it was not a.
And he's got all this padding.
Like a lot of people will actually.
It goes out wider.
You know, lean everything in. But you could see on that replay, it was slow motion. You could see his arm, just his elbow just rocking, basically.
Yes.
And moving in to get hit on the pad.
Right.
If he doesn't have a half to 1 inch pad on, he's got to lean another inch into the strike zone to get hit.
This is one thing.
So that's where that ball was.
I agree.
So it's like, this is like, he didn't even get hit. His pad got hit.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. That's one of the reasons why this has become a bigger issue over the years, too.
Exactly.
Is that you allow too many batters to have armor at the plate.
Yeah.
Because now, think about it. If you've got a pad that's, and I know this sounds crazy, but if you've got a pad or a guard on your elbow and it protrudes, you know, it's obviously it covers. So it's a quarter of an inch or an eighth of an inch fatter around your elbow. There's a
at least. Yeah.
In some cases, it's almost half an inch.
Like the plastic and everything.
Oh, that's a half an inch.
Half an inch.
Yeah. That's even easier to get hit and makes it harder for the pitcher to avoid hitting the guy.
Yeah.
So here's my thing. You know what would kind of solve guys, you know, leaning in and taking pitches in the strike zone for crying out loud, or in the zone with their hands, you know, and not afraid and not, you know, what would really clean it up a little bit? Don't allow them to have the body wear. Don't allow them to have elbow guards. Then you'll back off the plate a little bit because you get hit one time in the elbow. I'm going to tell you something. Without the elbow pad, you're going to be very careful to put yourself in that strike zone like Michael Conforto did yesterday. But he knows I've got protection.
Yeah.
And they got the shin guards now. It used to be you didn't have that. I know I'm going to sound like a fuddy-duddy. Back in the day.
Stuff I kind of understand a little bit. Like after Michael Tucker.
Right.
Remember when he fouled one off and broke his leg?
Oh, yeah. But old school never had that.
Yeah, but those aren't protruding and interfering with the pitch.
Well, if it hits your shin guard, that's a ball. It's probably too low.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But the elbow, I mean, and depending on the guy's stance, and we're talking about the strike zone, it's just, That would be one thing that would, I think, help and prevent some guys from leaning in.
Absolutely.
Or hovering in the plate or in the strike zone, is if you weren't allowed. I mean, Barry Bonds had the biggest. Yeah, oh, my goodness.
He was the worst one.
There's my goodness gracious. Yeah. It took him 30 seconds to take off all the body armor when he went to the plate.
Yeah.
After he walked all the time. So I just was absolutely appalled by how that game was determined. And I feel for the Marlins, and I give credit to the broadcasters and the Mets, and I give credit to the umpire for admitting he blew the call afterwards. Yeah. I give him a lot of credit. And honestly, I think Major League Baseball should come step up for the umpire a little bit here. I know the umpire is paid by Major League Baseball, and they're human, and he made a mistake. But he had nothing, like, he had nothing to get that call right, because the Major League Baseball has a dumb thing saying that's not reviewable. And I'm sorry. If we're going to do replay, let's not go half you-know-what. Let's not dip our toes in the pool. Let's just jump in. Yeah. If we're going to be doing replay, then let's go ahead and allow everything to be reviewed. Now, if you're going to do that, will there be more reviews? Yes, possibly there could be more reviews. Then put a stopwatch on it. Put a stopwatch on it, okay? It's not that hard. And say, you've got 60 seconds, or whatever, 90 seconds, 75 seconds. I don't care what you come up with. Come up with a number and say, if you can't make a clear-cut decision by that time, you can simply announce, there was not any conclusive evidence within the amount of time to review the play, thus the call stands. How hard is it to say that?
Yeah.
That would help. That would help. So I just was so upset about that. And I don't even have a dog in a fight. I don't care if the Mets or Marlins win. But a game should never be decided by a pitcher throwing a strike and it rewards the other team. That's insane. Apply the rule. It is there for you to use. But I do believe umpires feel it's a judgment call, which there's tons of judgment calls for umpires. Yeah. And it's just the easiest thing is to say, hey, guy got hit by a pitch, whether he moved or not, whether he's in the zone or not. He got hit by a pitch. Everybody saw it. Not a lot of people are going to argue. He got hit by a pitch. Because fans, I'm going to tell you right now, if that happened yesterday in a high school game or college game or, of course, in the pro game, I'll guarantee you there's a ton of fans at these games, high school, college, and pro, traveling baseball, whatever. A lot of fans would be completely confused if that was the call by the umpire.
Mm.
Even though it's the right call, some fans would be all mad and yelling because they don't know the rules. And maybe that's another reason why the home plate umpire doesn't have the stones to apply the rule. But I've seen it so many times. I see it more and more all the time at different levels of baseball. It has been something that's bugged me for a while. I've said it when I've been at baseball games before. I've said it when I've gone to pro games, when I called games before on the radio baseball. I said it back when I was in Seneca, when I did Legion games. I did Legion games for Beloit during the summer. And I've said it numerous times that he got hit by a pitch, but he made no effort to get out of the way, but the umpire didn't apply the rule. I said that a ton.
Oh, yeah.
And so what's the point of the rule if you're not going to use it?
Get rid of it.
Exactly. I mean, just erase it from the book, like, if you're not going
to
use it.
Take it out of there so we don't have to have discussions about this.
But there's got to be. But the thing is, there's got to be a rule about a strike, though.
Absolutely.
So there's got to be some kind
of
rule.
You can't completely get rid of it.
No,
but
you
it's
can't.
Just like, you know, I don't know. I think we have seen in professional sports, especially over the years, where there's sort of a lax approach to actually enforcing stuff. And I think it probably started in the NBA, to be completely honest.
I agree with you.
And so when you do that, and there's so much stuff that, I mean, I can see with my own eyes when I go to an actual NBA game and watch it on the court, and I'm there in the arena.
Right.
And it's like, oh, he traveled, like, all through the whole lane. Like, there was no even attempt, and then he get called for, a head fake travel.
Right.
In the NBA, and I'm like, well, you can call that, but you're not going to call a guy running five steps through the lane.
Yes.
And this is kind of the similar thing, right? Yes. It's like, okay, it's a strike. It's a strike. Call the strike, right? You're going to call something crazy here during the Major League Baseball game, but you're not actually going to apply a real rule that's in effect.
Yeah, that's there to protect you as an umpire.
You and the pitcher, for sure, at every single level. And that's, I mean, it's just wild and crazy to me that you can actually be in there and see that.
And it happens multiple times in games, too. It's happened multiple times, and it just never gets called.
Yeah, and it's just, I was like, wow.
Like
I
you said.
Video, I was like, this is, well, I put Bush League on Twitter.
It was Bush League.
And I'm like, you know, it's just like, how can they do it, first of all, and then how can you let them get away with it?
Yes.
in the end. It's like, because it is, it's clear. Like, it's not, nothing, there was nothing natural about the way he even tried to lean in. And it's like,
and it's not even matter if, it doesn't even matter if he leaned in or not. He made no effort to move. On top of it, he leaned in.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I mean, it was double clear obvious that there's no effort to move.
Yeah, and so that's all the umpire needs. That's all he needs.
He didn't have to lean
in. Plus, he leaned in. That made it even more obvious.
Yeah, I mean, he's just standing there. His rest of his body is stationary.
Didn't move.
And the elbow comes rolling just slightly in, kind of like
armor.
A circle with his... And I'm like, what are you doing, man? Like, how do you let them get away? I thought it was the Marlins broadcast, the first video.
No,
I
it
saw.
Was
and
the
then
Mets.
I, and then I saw, actually, it was the Mets that tweeted out the long video that I watched. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that at least somebody's calling them out. At least they're not like, oh, yeah, Mets won. Any way we can get it, let's do it, you know, basically what the manager said. But
well, those players have lost a lot of credibility. Two former major league ball players for the Mets. And the fact that there's no way that's how that game should be won, by an incorrect call. And it was a messed up call. And the umpire, you know, he messed up. I mean, I'm not going to berate the umpire. He messed up. This might be a good thing for umpires at every level to understand,
committee's gotta understand,
maybe we should apply this rule. Because I'm telling you, like you said, a kid at any age has got to at least make some kind of turn away from it. Like, if a guy throws a pitch right at your butt, 90-mile-an-hour fastball, you're probably not going to get out of the way of it, but you need to at least turn your body. If you at least turn even your upper body, you're at least trying to do something. But if you just stand there and let it hit you in the shoulder, and I've seen kids do that, and you know what the worst ones are? Is the slow breaking ball pitches.
And they just...
Like, they just sit there, and they see it coming. They know it's not going to hurt them. A curveball, a changeup, and they just wait for it to come, or even they don't even move their foot, and it hits the foot, and he doesn't even try to move his foot, and the umpire's like, here you go. Congratulations. You got first again. I'm like, he didn't even move.
Yeah.
He by a rule, he's supposed to make an effort. When it's a 68-mile-an-hour changeup, you can get out of the way. If you can't, you really aren't much of an athlete.
Yeah, I was like, you probably shouldn't be playing.
No.
If you can't get out of the way of a 68-mile-an-hour pitch.
Yes. Yes.
It is. It's wild to me.
So
again,
maybe
the rules committee, maybe they'll look at it and maybe they'll see.
Well, it's got to be a reviewable play.
And change that part of it. They're not going to take it out, obviously, because this is an area where you make sure you keep it in.
Yes.
But enforce it the right way.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see after what happened with that controversial state and that determined the game-winner for the Mets. It'll be interesting to see moving forward if umpires are going to be a little bit more stringent and actually enforce it.
Yeah.
My guess is they probably won't.
Yeah, I don't think it.
Maybe
from that aspect of it, I don't think it's going to change. I think the only change you're going to see is if
it's
you can
a strike.
Review it.
If it's a strike, I think it'll be enforced.
And they make it reviewable too. I mean, that's the only time you're actually going to see the change.
I agree.
Because they're not going to penalize people for not moving out of the way anymore. I mean, I think they've made that very clear the last 10 years probably.
Okay, KU men's basketball. Ochai Agbaji declaring for the NBA draft, and then people freak out. Listen, folks. If you don't sign with an agent, you can come back to school.
You can actually sign with an agent.
Yes, you got up to a certain time.
Right now. Yeah.
So there's rules change.
If they're legit agents, you can actually do that by now too.
Right. But here's the thing: a lot of players do this.
Yes.
Ochai Agbaji is the only time he can do it. The rest of his college career, you can go 1 year and you can declare for the draft. You can go through the combine. You can go through the workouts. It's a process, and you learn what you need to work on. If you withdraw from the draft this year, go back to college for the next year, and then go for the draft the second time, then you have a good idea of what you got to improve on to help your stock rise. Many players have done this. Yesterday, everybody's like, not everybody, but there were people like, oh, Budgie's stupid. He's an idiot, calling a whole bunch of names. He's not ready for the NBA.
Love all the scouts on social media.
Yeah, all the scouts have never probably watched him.
Right?
Probably didn't even watch
him.
He's
not ready. You got to come back.
He's not ready. Well, tell us specifically what he needs to do better. If you do that, at least you have a little credibility because you actually watched him play. And so everybody's a scout or a coach or whatever. And so they're like, oh, he's a moron. He's an idiot. What's he doing? He's not ready for the NBA. He's not going to get drafted. It's just stupid. No, it's actually very smart what he's doing because he's allowed to do this once. He's a junior already, so he can go ahead and do this now. He knows that he will be going, graduating next year. He will, if he comes back to college, he'll have one more year playing at KU. He will then proceed to the NBA or try to make the NBA. That's his goal, is to play in the NBA. So he enters a name in the NBA draft pool. He has the option to return to school for a senior season. He gets to be critiqued, and they will dress him down and figure out exactly what he's not good at. He'll learn from that. Bill Self gets this information as well. And then Agbaji will know what he needs to improve on to perhaps be drafted coming up next year. I highly, 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 highly doubt that Ochai Agbaji is going to stay in the NBA draft this year. He will not get drafted as of now unless he would have unbelievable numbers with this or that, and I don't think that's going to happen. So this is a smart move by Ochai Agbaji. So the people that really aren't very smart are the ones yelling that he's an idiot, which is ironic, don't you think, as Alanis Morissette was saying. So it's a great idea. A great idea by Ochai Agbaji. It's not even his idea. I mean, it's something that's available. He will sign with an agent, but will continue to follow guidelines set by the NCAA and NBA to protect his collegiate eligibility. Now, there used to be you couldn't even sign for an agent. If you did, then you were done.
Basically, the workaround is you don't pay or get paid by that agent
until
you're drafted.
You are drafted. I mean,
they give you, so they say, hey, if you get drafted, then your commissions will start coming in, or you'll pay me. And
mm-hmm. So Agbaji this year averaged 14 points. Let's see. Shot 38% from three. Listen, he was still streaky this year. The NCAA tournament, he had open looks. He couldn't knock them down. He was better this year. He's made improvements each and every year. But I'm sorry, in my humble opinion, I don't think he's even close to being ready to play in the NBA. That's my opinion from what I've seen. Now, maybe he could. You know, Wesley Iwundo has had a pretty good long NBA career, and he wasn't a great college player.
Right? No, he
had the intangibles in regards to
the
wingspan.
He could get it.
He had the right body frame to play in the league, be a good defensive player, maybe hit occasional three.
Yeah.
He had a role, and he fit on a roster, and that worked out pretty well for him, and he's made money doing that. But he was not that great of a college player at all, Wesley Iwundo.
Yeah.
But he found a niche. Which
definitely
he was athletic.
I mean,
we knew that.
You watch him play, you know that if he can.
Well, Rodney McGruder wasn't a great college player. He was a very good one.
His senior year was better than most
but
of his time.
He's been in the league for a very long time. But if he came out of his freshman, sophomore, junior year, he wouldn't have been nothing. So some guys take a little bit longer to develop and improve their games. And remember, Ochai was rushed into playing his freshman year when originally he wasn't going to.
Yeah.
So it makes total sense, and if you're a KU fan freaking out about Agbaji leaving and he won't be back on the team next year, I would say cool your jets, because more than likely
he didn't have to
he's
have
coming
like
back.
Really outstanding performances at combines and things like that, and workouts for pro teams to be
even drafted
to even get into the middle of the second round, right? And that's we're not even talking about what you would actually leave college for.
Exactly. So I'm pretty confident he will be too, and I think Bill Self knows it, and I think Agbaji even knows it. The Masters, first round of the books yesterday, Justin Rose, outstanding, shot a 765. He was great on the back nine. Today, Justin Rose is even. He bogeyed, I believe, the first hole, went to 6-under, but now he's back to 7-under. He has a 4-stroke lead in the second round of the Masters in Augusta, Georgia. So Justin Rose leading. We'll see if he can go wire to wire. You don't see that too often. Dustin Johnson had a rough first round. Rory McIlroy had a rough first round. I saw a drive by Phil Mickelson that was about as horrible a drive you'll see a professional golfer ever hit yesterday. I think that thing was in a whole different continent, let alone in the same zip code where he pulled it to the right. Of course, he's a lefty. So we'll continue to see an update as the Masters. Well, we don't have to update, I guess, but we'll update later today on sports. But then we'll have the on Monday, we'll know who won and everything else. Gary Woodland, I'm looking to see where he's at. Dustin Johnson, 2-over yesterday. Brooks Koepka was 2-over. Some people thought he could get it done. Tony Finau is 2-over. Robert Streb, a former K-Stater, was 3-over. I'm looking to see. Mickelson was 4-over. Bryson DeChambeau can hit the ball about 5,000 yards. He's 4-over. Did I overlook Woodland? I must have scrolled through.
I think he was 1-over yesterday.
Okay.
And I don't know if he's gone out yet today or not.
I don't think. It doesn't look like he has.
Yeah.
So Woodland, there you go. Woodland, 1-over, it appears. He's 2-over now. He's two over. No, three over. He's two over today. Gary Woodland from, of course, Topeka, KU alum. He, through five holes in round two, is three over for the tournament, two over in his second round. And now Justin Rose apparently, let's see, I'm going to update that again because I think that thing moved on me a couple times. But now they're showing what I've got here, live leaderboard, showing that Justin Rose is back to six under. So must have bogeyed a hole again. So we'll continue to follow that with the Masters there in Augusta. This was some interesting stuff that came over Twitter yesterday. There's been this big, a lot of talk, of course, about inequality when it comes to women's and men's sports in college athletics, and even pros as well, NBA versus WNBA. I think we're in a society that is so super sensitive, and we live in PC world, as I like to call it, where nobody seems to be very, very willing to be honest. Like, people have an agenda, and so thus they shove their agenda, but no deep down what's really going on. Okay?
Yeah.
Listen, not everything in life is fair. Is it fair, whether you're a man or a woman, that you're at a job for 10 years and you're paid the same amount of money as the kid that came out of college? Well, what are you going to do about it? I mean, it is what it is. You know, times are different. Now there might be a person that has got 10 job offers. You got to really want that person. You're going to have to give them more money to attract them to your company. Whereas 10 years ago when you were hired, you might not have had as much competition for the job, or you really needed it. So you took a deal that was good for the company and you thought it was good for you at the time. I'll give you another example. You see all these phone companies, AT&T, Verizon, you see these all the time, it's DirecTV, Dish Network, these companies where they say, hey, for new customers, we got this great deal. Well, why don't the old customers get that deal?
Yeah.
The old customers have been with you for 15, 20 years. They don't get their bill reduced to the low introductory rate for new customers.
Yeah.
Is that fair? Is there a great, gigantic uproar about that? There probably should be.
Yeah, there should.
But there isn't.
Yeah.
Because you're just like, it is what it is, right? Now, having said that, there's no doubt that women's sports are not taken as seriously as men's sports. And there's no doubt that women don't get the same luxuries as a student athlete in college as the men do. There's no doubt about that. I've seen it firsthand. I've traveled the K-State women's basketball team. They travel fine. There's nothing wrong with it. But let me tell you something. The meals are different. They're good meals, but the football team gets taken care of even more so than the basketball teams. And then the men's team might get a little nicer hotel than the women's team, even though they're still nice hotels. I'm not saying the women's basketball program, lives in the dumps. Okay, yeah. They don't.
They're not slumming it.
No, they're not slumming it. Okay, but that's the university. That's Kansas State University or whoever taking care of their own team and student athletes. There's still a discrepancy there, but it's not that big. Per se.
Yeah.
But when you get the NCAA involved, and then you start having these situations where, of course, the big controversy, there's this big weight room for the college basketball players for the NCAA tournament for the men, but the women didn't have anything, basically. And it was a sad, and the pictures were posted and videos and so forth and so on. And listen, if you want to be brutally honest, this is what it comes down to. It comes down to money. It always comes down to money. I wish this world wasn't all about money or our country wasn't all about money, but it is. It's about money, okay? Now, women's sports ratings have gone up, all right? Numbers have gone up. It is trending upward in many situations. It is. But it still doesn't even compare to the ratings that let's just focus on college basketball for now. College men's basketball gets way more ratings than college women's basketball. Now, you can argue that the men's gets more exposure on the prime networks, and thus they get better ratings. The women are relegated to ESPN News, while the men are on ESPN and ESPN2 and so forth and so on. I get all that. I do. And part of the reason why that is because ESPN knows that we're going to put the best matchup that's going to draw the most viewers, which thus gives us ratings, and thus we can go and sell and raise our rates to sponsors and advertisers, we're going to put the best game on ESPN. Listen, if there's like hardly any good men's basketball games and Connecticut's playing Tennessee in a women's basketball game and they're ranked one or two, that might, I stress might, get on ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
But any other matchup for women's basketball, you could have a men's NIT game and the women could have their national championship game. And it'll be, the women will be on ESPN, NIT men will be on ESPN too. But there was a time where that wouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a discrepancy, no doubt. But we have to understand there is a discrepancy in ratings. There's a discrepancy in ad revenue. If the women's sports got the ratings that the men's sports got, there would be more advertisers willing to pay more money. Thus, the TV deals go higher, and thus, the women's sports would get better TV deals, and so forth and so on. Now, having said that, women will come back and argue, women's college basketball in particular, is that, well, we need better TV deals. Well, then it kind of goes hand in hand. If you can get increased ratings where you are, then maybe it can justify a network paying more money to give a bigger deal to broadcast the NCAA women's basketball tournament. You see what I'm saying? Like, if you don't, what you hear from one side is, well, you know what? Our ratings aren't as good as the men, true, but we aren't on ESPN all the time. We're on ESPN News. And I get that point.
Mm-hmm.
At the same reason, there's a reason why you're on ESPN News as ESPN, because the proof is that the ratings are this or that. And the women could come back and say, well, put us on the main network and see if we could get the same ratings, which has probably been done. It has been done, actually. And it is different. There is a discrepancy. Having said all of that, now there is, and this is something that upsets me, okay? And I'm going to side with women on this one, no doubt. And I'm not saying that I wasn't siding with women just a moment ago. I'm not. But you need to be honest, and you need to be objective. And there's so many people that don't get that part. Like, you know, this is the same thing about arguing about why doesn't men's and women's coaches get paid the same as football coaches? Because football is the number one revenue-producing sport in college football. In Power 5 conferences, that is the sport that drives everything is football. But you don't hear about this inequity with sports, per se, right? You don't see men's college basketball complaining about football getting too much money because football helps pay for other sports. So let's lead into women's volleyball. The women's volleyball tournament, or the first and second round matches, I guess, are going to be up in, where are they going to be, Omaha? It's up in Nebraska, apparently. I don't have all the information in front of me. Dusty can maybe look it up. So Emily Eamon, she is a sports reporter, covers women's sports, and she put it out there yesterday on Twitter. Just got word that the first two rounds of the NCAA volleyball tournament will not have broadcast crews or commentators. This is absolutely unacceptable. Teams have been preparing for over a year and a half for this opportunity. We need to be better. And she tagged the NCAA about that. Also, she put, per multiple NCAA volleyball coaches, the eight practice courts in the convention center are sport court layered over cement flooring that is very high risk for injury and not suitable for players' safety, especially any players jumping repeatedly. What else we got here? Also, she says, I like to add that all matches are being played in a convention center, whereas of yesterday, coaches were told there will be no locker rooms until the Elite Eight. Players will have to change out of warm-ups into jerseys on the bench. Let me ask you a question. Do you think any men's basketball team would have to do that?
Absolutely not.
And that part is totally baloney. It's bull.
But
it's where they chose to have it, too. You know, a convention center,
mm-hmm.
which is the first part of the problem, right?
Yeah.
So, this lady put out, the reporter, she said, I'll repeat it, there'll be no broadcast crews, no play-by-play, no color commentator, no announcing of the volleyball matches for the first and second rounds of the NCAA volleyball tournament. We're not talking exhibition matches.
Yeah.
We're talking the NCAA volleyball tournament. And if you don't understand what I'm trying to get through to you here is, imagine watching the NCAA men's basketball tournament, first and second round games with no announcers there to tell you anything. It's just natural sound. That's it. It'd be like me streaming baseball last night. Natural sound, because I don't do play-by-play on the baseball streaming. It just, you got the shot, you hear the PA announcer, that's all you got. That would drive you nuts, wouldn't it? You'd be demanding, oh, that's, we got to have announcers. We got to have announcers for TV coverage of men's basketball. This is atrocious. This is horrible. What's the deal? Why is it just women volleyball that's not going to have broadcast crews? Why don't we have no broadcast crews and commentators for men's sports? It's a great question.
Yeah.
It's a great question. And it's a question that ESPN should answer. And the NCAA should answer. Because ESPN owns the rights to it. So when this was posted yesterday, that there will be no announcers for the first and second round of the NCAA volleyball tournament, and trust me, I used to live up in Omaha, and there's some really good broadcasters in Omaha. And I'm going to tell you something. The state of Nebraska, they know volleyball.
Absolutely, they do.
So you got local people right there that are willing to freelance, and you probably wouldn't have to pay them a lot of money, and they do it. In fact, we got people now saying, I'll do it for free. Because I'd like to do it, that's fine, but this is nuts. Women deserve play-by-play and color commentary on the NCAA volleyball national tournament. They deserve this. And all those people are right. Western Kentucky Volleyball has already reached out and offered to provide a remote commentator for any matches they play. They still haven't received an answer back. So let's get this straight. So there are people that are willing to sit at home and do a remote broadcast for free so that there's announcers for volleyball. And ESPN/NCAA saying, no. No other entity can come in and broadcast volleyball, by the way, because ESPN paid whatever small money they paid, or maybe they overpaid, I don't know. And ESPN has exclusive rights to these. And a lot of these are going to be on ESPN3. Well, guess what? ESPN3's had broadcasters for any other sporting event that I've seen on ESPN3. So what is this about? Is this about ESPN spending way too much money for gigantic TV deals with male sports? Okay?
Yeah.
Monday Night Football is one that comes to mind. The NBA, they've overpaid for a lot of stuff to get it away from ABC, NBC, and CBS. We know that. Disney. That's the company that owns ESPN and ABC. They spent a ton of money on sports. We know about all the layoffs ESPN's had. COVID hit. They were laying people out before that. Laid off a ton of people. And so they really, honestly, I think, overspent and spent too much. So this is where we're going to draw the line. We're going to save a few pennies. And it is, trust me, pennies when we're talking about this. Is that the reason ESPN's not going to have broadcasters? Because they can't afford it? That's baloney. Yeah. They can afford it. It comes back to what this one person said. And let me see if I can find it on Twitter because I thought it was a really good statement. Where is it here? Please, please let me find it because I thought it was awesome and I can't find it now. Darn it. But it was by somebody. I forgot who it was. And she said, let's just go ahead and call it what it is.
I think it was probably Jen. Was it Jen Bates? Is that what you...
No, it wasn't Jen Bates.
She had something very similar to
it. It was Aaron Sorensen was her name. Okay. I'm see if I can find it because I would like to quote it word for word, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to... Maybe this is it. I'm going to pull it up here. Yes, I think I do have it. Let me... Please, please let it come up. I want to read it word for word. I don't want to... I would love to... She goes, I've been stuck on the feeling all afternoon that this, much like the women's basketball tournament, has been treated like such a chore for the NCAA, something to check off the list. The response doesn't make me feel any differently. And this is in Omaha, by the way. And what else we got here? Here we go. Here's what I wanted to pull up. Aaron Sorensen says, I've been trying to collect my thoughts for a while, and I'm going to try because I've seen some ask how the NCAA could get this so wrong after what just happened with the women's basketball tournament, which became a national story. And she says, I've come to the conclusion, the simple answer is, you have to truly care about women's sports in the first place. Yeah, I think that's true.
You do.
I think that's true. Listen, I understand the difference in pay. Okay, I do. I understand the difference in the TV contracts, which is a source of payment, let's be honest.
Yeah.
I understand those discrepancies, and I think deep down, women understand the discrepancies in that. Okay? I've said this before, and I'm not trying to get in trouble here, but if I've been one of those people that has felt like, and I would say this if it was the other way around. In tennis... Women only play three sets of tennis.
Mm-hmm.
Men play five. Best out of five. Women play best out of three. Women have to win two sets to win a tennis match in professional tennis. Men have to win three. And so then the argument is women should have equal pay. Now, in that situation, I hesitate because if somebody's working more, which the men are, and every single match they've got to play an extra set, you're looking at possibly playing, well, if it's the best out of five every match of a tournament, and the women play the best out of three, and they go the distance, three every match, there's six matches in the tournament typically in tennis. That means that a man could have to play six more sets of tennis, and the women get paid the same amount of money for playing six less sets, which would be equivalent of two less matches. See, to me, when you get caught up in the, well, that women got to be paid the same as men on the tennis circuit. To me, that's fine. Then let's go ahead and go to best out of three sets for men. Or let's go to best three out of five for women. And if your comeback is, well, women can't handle that much. They can't play five sets. They physically can't do it. Well, if that's what your argument is, why can they physically accept the same amount of money to play less?
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm not saying women shouldn't get paid as much as men if the things are equal, right? And isn't that what we're arguing all along is about equality? So women, college basketball players, play the same amount of minutes on a basketball floor, right?
Yes.
The games are just as long.
Yes.
The rules are virtually the same. There's also men's volleyball, by the way. There is men's volleyball, and there's women's volleyball. But let's just stick with that for basketball. College men's basketball, college women's basketball, there are, you know, there's quarters instead of halves. They play the same amount of minutes of games. Mm. The rules are slightly different here and there. Very, very small different rule changes. It's the same game. They play the same amount of time. So if college men athletes were paid, all right, to play college basketball, and the women are playing the same amount of games during the season as well, by the way, then if you told me college women, if you're going to start paying athletes, right, then I would say college women athletes should be paid, in this situation, basketball. College women's basketball players should be paid the exact same amount as college men's basketball players based on they're playing the same length of game. They're playing just as many games. They all got to travel, so forth and so on. I would listen to that argument. Absolutely. I'll listen to that argument. Mm-hmm. Now, people will come back and say, well, that's great and all, but nobody watches your sport. And so men should get all these additions because they bring more to the table and they're helping pay for women's volleyball or women's basketball. Of course, the big argument is football. Football says, listen, you want to get all mad about the coach getting all a bunch of money? You want to get all mad about the football team getting better accommodations? Well, without football, you would have no women's volleyball team. That would be the comeback there. So I'm just being brutally honest about the different perspectives that people can come back on. And I get all of it. I do. I truly understand it. If you have a boxing match and the guy has to take punches for 15 rounds and there's women's boxing, which I don't know how many rounds women's go, but let's just make up something here. Okay, so if men's have boxing and they got to go 12 rounds and women have to go 8 rounds, and then they're going to say that women should be paid the exact same amount as men, I'm going to say I don't think so. Because the men got to go through 4 more rounds of boxing. But if the men go back to 8 rounds of boxing, or the women would go to 12, or whatever the rounds would be, now I totally hear you. Because to me, that's an equal playing field. That's a level playing field. And you could argue, well, men hit harder than women. I don't know, man. Some women can hit pretty hard. All right? Then you're getting into intricacies. But I'm talking about the length of a competition. If you want things to be equal, then let's make sure that things are equal, not just for pay, but equal in regards to, okay, how many games do they play, how long the games are, whether it's a tennis match, how many sets. Let's be objective and logical about that, okay? Now, let's go back to the issue at hand. Women's volleyball. This is the NCAA tournament. This is postseason play. And you can't come up with a... They're out there. We know they're out there because all these people are willing to do it for free. You can't apply yourself, ESPN and NCAA, to provide announcers. I mean, you paid money for this. You obviously thought there was some value in it, right? And so you have it on ESPN3, and yes, that's not great exposure for women at all for the volleyball, but it is better than nothing because there was a time where none of this volleyball would have been broadcast at all.
Yeah, you're lucky to get the Final Four on.
You're lucky to get that on
like
TV.
The last right. three matches of the tournament.
And usually that'd be on ESPN2 or something else.
Yeah, it's not a...
It's not the, on the main network.
Yeah, it's not a main draw at
all. So what happens here? Women deserve, and I'm not just going to say women, athletes of any sport, if you want to call it equal from this standpoint, they're all scholarship student athletes or walk-ons too, whatever. Whether it's rowing, whether it is lacrosse, whether it's rugby, whether it's soccer, whether it's women's volleyball, whether it's wrestling. By the way, wrestling doesn't get nearly as much exposure nationally.
No.
Okay, at all. But there is no pro wrestling circuit. There is pro basketball for women. It's called the WNBA, right? Is there a pro volleyball circuit for the women that I don't know
not
much about
in this country, there's not.
They're trying to get soccer going women now because Patrick Mahomes' fiance is part owner of a team now in Kansas City to grow women's soccer. Because when you think about it, when do we care about women's soccer?
World Cup.
Once World Cup's over, do we really follow women's soccer much? I don't. But that's not a knock on just women. I don't follow men's soccer either.
Yeah.
So I'm not picking a fight there. I mean, I'll watch soccer during the World Cup play, the U.S. men, U.S. women. Same thing with hockey. I'll watch the U.S. hockey team, men and women. I'll watch and cheer on my country. But if you go, I don't watch a ton of NHL hockey. I watch a little bit of it. And there was professional women's hockey, which maybe there is.
There is, yeah.
But how would I know? It's nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
And that's the counter argument. Well, if you don't give us a chance on the networks, how is anybody going to find our sport? And that's the challenge for Patrick Mahomes' fiance, because we know about Sporting KC. We know about Royals. We know about the Chiefs. We know about Patrick Mahomes. But we don't. Can anybody name one player on the soccer women's professional soccer team in Kansas City right now? Odds are no. Are they going to be on ESPN, ESPN2, or Fox, or FS1? Probably not.
No.
And so they got to start and grow something. We have seen some sports grow. UFC has grown out of nothing, all right? Different sports have grown. NASCAR is a great example how it's grown. Now, UFC has grown both on the women's and men's side,
yeah.
Whereas NASCAR, it's a men's sport. It's a male sport. It's moved on. If there was just a female NASCAR circuit, do you think that would get on ESPN? No, it wouldn't. It would not get – it'd be relegated to a lower-level station that they have with their family stations. And so you have to build the product. And so it's easy to say, well, your product isn't as good as this. Okay, but can we let the public decide that? And some people say, well, you had a chance. We have a selected game here or there on ESPN. But we don't have the full big month. We don't have Big Monday. We don't have blockbuster Saturday night women's college basketball games, but the men do. So you're not really giving us a chance to grow our sport as much as it could. And I will tell you this right now. Women's sports, they are growing, okay?
Oh, yeah.
They are growing. There's some men's sports that are growing. UFC is growing. There's no doubt about that. I think soccer is growing. And I think some of the big sports, you know, I think NBA is kind of like there. I don't know if it's growing. Some people argue it's maybe going down a little bit. You know, some of the ratings for baseball and football and basketball professionally have been down at times. Some of that could have been COVID. Some of that could be political. Who knows? I'm not going to get into that. But at the end of the day, let's be real about this. Every student athlete that's on scholarship or even a walk-on puts in a lot of work, whether you're a wrestler, a swimmer, a soccer player, a basketball player, a football player, a volleyball player. They all, women and men, put in a lot of time and effort into their craft and into their sport. But here's the thing. You can't broadcast every single thing on ESPN. There's only so much airtime. There's scheduling conflicts. And so it is a business. ESPN runs it as a business. So they put on the best high-profile games, which happen to be mostly male sports games, on their big network, and they put the other stuff on the smaller channels, all right? That's the way they run their business. And if you, a woman, ran that business, or a man, you would probably understand it once you were there that I got a job to please my shareholders. We spent a lot of money on rights for Monday Night Football and college football and all this other stuff. We've got to, you know, instead of laying everybody off, we got to pay people. We got to be able to make this work as a corporation. So you would understand that a little bit better from that standpoint. But if you are a person fighting for equal rights in regards to women and men with sports, it is the right thing to do to say we are not being treated equally. At the same time, you will never be treated equally, whether that's good or bad, because women are different than men. You cannot treat a woman the exact same way you treat a man in most cases. In most cases, you can't. You know why? Because we're different. And in fairness, let's not even make this a women-men thing. In fairness, I thought about this the other day. I talked about you with you about it. As a coach, we talk about this, college coaches. Well, Bill Self gets paid so much money, and he gets all this talent. Yeah, true. He's got to make 15 different personalities mesh.
Yeah.
From guys that play from Nigeria, from Houston, Texas, from Burlington, Kansas, to Chicago, Illinois, to Bradenton, Florida. And then he's got guys that are white, black. He might have Puerto Rican. He may have Hispanic. He may have guys from Africa playing on his team, from Svi Mykhailiuk, who's from the Ukraine. Now you got language barriers. You've got white and black on your team. You've got all kinds of ethnicities. You've got now, and I haven't even got the personalities yet. Then you got to figure out how you deal with each personality individually. And then you've got to decide who gets to play and who doesn't. Can you yell and scream at this guy or a woman? Or do you have to be like treading lightly with this player, but the other one you can really get on? It's almost a different set of coaching rules for every coach with every single personality on their team. I mean, you can't, it really is that way.
Yeah.
And so whether it's a woman or whether it's a man, whether it's a college athlete or not, everybody's personalities are different. I have people that have coached women's sports and men's sports that I know, and they tell me it is different. And they said not in a bad way. They're just saying you have to approach things differently when you're coaching men versus coaching women. That's what they have told me. I've never coached girls' sports, so I don't know. And so there are differences. It's obvious. There's men and women. We are all different, but every individual is different. And so when you're talking about equality, it shouldn't just be women and men. It should be everybody, right? Everybody, regardless of gender. But since we're talking about gender now with this topic of volleyball, the NCAA volleyball tournament is on ESPN3, and they can't provide announcers? There are people that are willing to do it for free. Surely something can be done. Can't common sense prevail? What happened to logic? Because it does send a horrible message, ESPN and NCAA. It sends a horrible message to women out there and young ladies out there. Hey, great job making the tournament. We're going to put it on TV, but we're not going to go all the way in. Even though you made the National Volleyball Tournament, we're just not going to provide announcers until the third and fourth round. Why don't they do that for men's sports? They'd save money, right?
Yeah.
They'd save a lot of money. They pay the men announcers a heck of a lot more money than they probably pay the women's announcers. It is a great point. And if I were a woman today, and if I am a student athlete that is a woman today, and I see and read about the lack of accommodations in the women's national basketball tournament, and I see the lack of accommodations for the NCAA volleyball tournament, and I can't even go to the locker room to change my shirt, and now I can't even get announcers to announce national volleyball tournament first and second round matches, the message to me is clear. You're only providing women's sports because legally you have to. That's all you're doing, NCAA. And ESPN, you're only broadcasting because you probably have to as part of your agreement with the NCAA and broadcasting college sports. So you're not going all the way here either. And I think it is sad. And I think it is pathetic. Because if you're going to put something on TV, then go ahead and jump into the pool completely instead of dipping your toes. If you're going to put it on TV, you're going to pay camera operators, and you got people that are willing to freelance right there in Omaha to do games, And what do you want? You know what? You could pay him $50 a game, which is not much.
Yeah.
They could pay him $50 a match. It would be chump change for ESPN. This is a bad look for ESPN. It's a bad look for the NCAA. And what's really sad is, after everything that took place with the women's basketball tournament and the lack of the facilities and the lack of a weight room, which was embarrassing, this is how we follow it up? That is pathetic. Women, not only women, but any student athlete who worked just as hard as some of these that get the exposure deserve better. I'm not saying they all have to be on ESPN primetime Saturday night. But if you're going to have it on TV or ESPN or streaming it, you're gonna draw the line at announcers? Come on, man. I understand if you can't find anybody to do it, but the fact that you don't even try to get anybody to do it is beyond pathetic. And that's just one thing. The facilities, you know, they would never put a men's national tournament in a convention center.
No.
Now, why is that? It goes back to what Aaron Sorensen said. You have to care about women's sports first before you can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's right. It shows that they don't care. And when they do really care is when people call them out on it.
Yeah.
And which it should never come to that.
No, it shouldn't. I mean, there's basic concepts of equality that should just apply, right?
Like, yes.
There's things that just, okay, no matter what the revenue is, no matter what the situation is, this is the baseline of what they deserve. And the NCAA continues to not meet that. And it's just insane to me. But Mark Emmert's going to come out. Okay, and I talked about this one time when I was hosting the show. The biggest insanity of all this is that NCAA doesn't have to abide by Title IX because they're a private institution, right?
There's your
work. So these things right here are under the NCAA umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll enforce all these public schools to make sure they're
Title IX
in compliance with Title IX.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have to be themselves. And so that's where your first disconnect is and mm-hmm. your first issue. And so that's why you have these kind of things that happen, because they're not required by Title IX to provide everything equally as a private institution, the NCAA. I mean, just hypocrisy runs rampant in the organization, and it's just another thing to add to it. So Mark Emmert's going to say, we're going to do this investigation on why this happened with the women's basketball tournament. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, for the NCAA, that investigation's not going to be free. Why don't you just take the money that you're wasting by having that investigation? Because we all know.
Thank you.
We all know why. Because it comes down to money. Why not take that money and send it to this to have announcers at the tournament to let ESPN, that you're going to spend on an investigation of why this is happening? There's no investigation that needs to be done. Do the right thing and make sure that everything is covered the way it needs to be covered. Make sure the facilities are the way they need to be set up. And it's just like, they just talk out of one end, and I can't deal with a lot of the stuff that they're doing that they can get away with, like I said, because they're a private institution that can take all that money that they get from ESPN or CBS, TNT, True TV, TBS, Turner Group, whoever they're getting it from.
Right.
They'll go ahead and take all that money, but they don't distribute it the way they need to make sure everybody's being treated the right way. It's not about distribution of wealth. It's about distribution of making sure you have the right things set up.
Yes. We started the show with common sense, right?
Yeah.
Really, like, logically common sense. And this... You know, I will say, obviously, there's worse things in the world than not having announcers for a sports broadcast.
Sure.
There's worse things in the world than playing a tournament in a convention center. I mean, there's many bigger problems in the world today. But this is a sports show, so we're talking about that inequality that takes place in sports. You want to talk about equal pay, okay, that's a discussion. You want to talk about equal accommodations, that's a discussion. Or you just want to say good accommodations compared to drastically different accommodations, which might be part of this what we're really discussing as well. But when you have a national tournament and you're drawing the line, first and second round don't have announcers, it's just embarrassing, because we know ESPN is a multi-billion-dollar company, and we know the NCAA is doing just fine financially. And that's like Dusty just said, you could save a lot on all the wasted legal fees you're doing in investigations and then defending yourself against KU right now, because KU is going to probably sue. If the NCAA slaps something on KU with major punishment, there's going to be a lawsuit.
Yeah.
We already talked about that. So the NCAA will then have more money to spend. And that's why I think eventually KU won't get as big a deal as some people think, because the NCAA is not going to want to keep going down that route over and over. And if that's the case, then you're something that doesn't have teeth. You know, you talk a big game, but you can't back it up. We shall see. But I think you make a good point about that.